Hi, this is Pastor Matt, and I want to welcome you to our Blue Oaks Church podcast. At the end of this episode, feel free to download our Blue Oaks Church app, where you'll be able to access resources, events, and ways to get connected at Blue Oaks and in the community. The app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to keep up with everything going on around Blue Oaks. Most importantly, though, I just hope that you enjoy this episode and it inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. There's a story that's been around for a long time now. I don't know where it came from. A long time ago, there was a carpenter, a master carpenter. He went into the house building business and built some great houses. After many years of working for the same employer, he decided that he was tired. He wanted to get out of the contract and he wanted to retire. His boss said, "Okay, but there's one more house on the contract." It was a beautiful lot with a magnificent view, and the boss wanted it to be a dream house and insisted that the master carpenter build it. The carpenter agreed. He needed the money to build a little cottage for his retirement, but his heart wasn't in it. He resented having to do the work, so he cut corners, he got sloppy, he substituted particle board for good wood, he used plastic pipes where copper pipes were called for, walls got put up that were not built to plumb. He did things that would make Chip and Joanna Gaines sick to their stomachs. When he finished, his boss shook his hand, thanked them for the many years of their work together, and then his boss handed him an envelope. And when he opened it, he found it contained the deed to the house that he had just built. He didn't know that the house that he had been building with so much resentment and such a grudging spirit and so much dishonesty was the place where he was going to spend the rest of his years. Day after day, he had been given this opportunity to create something unique and magnificent. I mean, he could have done that, but he threw away the chance of a lifetime and he didn't even know. This all happened in a long ago time in a faraway place. If it had happened today in the Bay Area, he would have sold that miserable hovel for $5 million and built some mansion in Sacramento. Maybe you're watching online in Sacramento right now. You used to be here and you cashed out of your little house and you're living in a mansion in Sacramento. And those of us who are scrapping to find a way to live here and build a church for Jesus are happy for you, but not super happy. The carpenter in this story was deeply sad because he had done this to himself. He would spend the rest of his life living in a place that he built carelessly and resentfully and grudgingly and joylessly and without integrity. Our character is the house we live in, the house that matters, and we build it. Every one of us, one day at a time, one choice at a time, we build it. Every one of us, on purpose or by accident, for better or for worse, we build it. Every one of us, every day, by how we spend our time, by how we use the words to speak life into someone or not, by the people we love or the people we ignore, and especially by the thoughts that we allow to occupy our minds. I am building my life, and when I cut corners, when I compromise my integrity, when I build as I do sometimes with resentment or ego or pettiness or self, I am creating a future that will actually become my destiny. You are building your house. How is your house going? The writers of scripture were keenly interested in what a well-lived life looks like. How do human beings flourish? That's what Paul is interested in when he's writing this letter to the church at Corinth that we've been studying these days. In Corinth, everyone was building their lives, designing their lives. You know, it's the most popular course at Stanford. It became a New York Times bestseller, Designing Your Life. Everyone was designing their lives around the pursuit of status or wealth or reputation or honor. But there's another pattern for designing a human life, oddly, around humility and self-giving love and death to ego. It's a cross-shaped life. That's why the word cross and the pattern of the cross occur over and over and over in Paul's letter to the church at Corinth. In this message, we're going to look at how Paul talks about how we ought to design our lives in a way where the goodness of it will last because you have one chance. And sometimes we just throw it away. All right, so here we go. This is the third chapter of 1 Corinthians. This is what Paul writes. For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should build with care, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to the light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is sacred, and you together are that temple. Now, Paul's primary concern here is about the church. And we, you and me, are the church, the place where God's Spirit dwells. But of course, the church is made up of people, So this involves each of us, you and me. We're all constructing a life. And Paul makes this amazing statement, you are God's building, you. Have you heard of House Hunters, House Hunters International? It'll feature someone like, or a couple who want to relocate from like Odessa, Texas to like Switzerland or something like that. And they'll struggle over what kind of home or apartment that they want to live in. Well, in this passage, it's almost like God is house hunting and he wants to move from up there to down here. And oddly enough, his dream house is you. Of course, we're not fit to be God's dream house just yet. You're a fixer-upper, and so am I. We're under construction. And you will choose the materials that you will use to build your life. You will do this. Not your circumstances, but you will choose it. Paul lists six different materials in this passage, but they can really be divided essentially into two groups: gold, silver, or precious stones. Those are materials that will stand up through the fire. The fire in the Bible very often is an image that talks about God's judgment, God's penetrating and discerning ability to decide what is good and what is not. Gold, silver, and precious stones are materials that have qualities that will stand up to his judgment. Wood, hay, or straw are materials or qualities that will not. Building your life, which you and I will inevitably do, is not mostly a matter of our outer circumstances. And we often think that our lives are about, you know, what kind of income do we have? Or what kind of vocational opportunities do we have? Or how high is my IQ? Or what is my body shape like? Or is my face attractive? Or is my hair stylish? Or is my resume impressive? Or is my GPA impressive? It's not about that. It's my character. It's the quality of my inner life that matters. It's the kind of thoughts and desires and intentions and habits that come to govern my minutes and my hours and my days and my years. That's what matters most about me. You see, we live in a place that is so deluded about this. Money, title, office, reputation, are dust or ashes in comparison. They're going to be gone like a snap. And some people with great looking outer lives are living in spiritual hovels. And some people who appear very unimpressive in worldly terms are actually, even now, beginning to inhabit an eternal masterpiece. We think even what matters to God are things that we do for God, like our accomplishments or our achievements. They're not. As Dallas Willard said, the main thing God gets out of your life is the person you become. The main thing God gets out of your life is not your resume. It's not your accomplishments. It's the person you become. And that's actually the main thing that you get out of your life. That's what you will take with you into eternity. This text poses two questions, and I want to invite you to use these questions as you examine your life in light of the cross, this pattern of self-giving and others-serving love. There are two questions for this message, and they're really simple. And the first one is this: what will I build my life with? What are the qualities of spirit that a wise carpenter would choose? For gold, silver, and precious stones, we might think about what Paul would refer to as the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace. For wood, hay, and stubble, we might think of their opposing qualities. So instead of love, ego. Instead of joy, envy. Instead of peace, hurry or chronic anxiety. The reason we need to examine our lives in light of the cross is that the true nature of my inner life and my character is actually only known to God. One day it will be revealed in high definition. And Paul says, by way of talking about this, the day will bring it to light. And when he talks about that, this idea of the day, it's an old phrase from the Bible, is the day of the Lord, the day of God's judgment, when God will make everything clear and all the mysteries will get solved, and there will be no moral ambiguity and no wrongs that are not made right. I want to tell you about two different people. There are two leaders who are part of the ministry world that I inhabit. But this is kind of a choice that we all face. From the outside, these two lives looked remarkably similar. They led many people, they designed programs, they were involved in organizational leadership, they would often speak at the same conferences and teach on the same subjects and run in the same circles and have similar levels of recognition and success. Yet a striking difference would emerge as you got to know each of them up close. And when you get to know their inner circle of people who knew them really well or watched how they responded in hidden moments of their daily life. With one of them, the better people got to know him, the more they loved him. I mean, he was kind, he was gentle, he was humble, he cared about people. When he was wrong, he would admit it quite easily. He was unhurried. It was life-giving to work with him. He just naturally treated people well. His peers, his subordinates, or someone on the wait staff of a restaurant, like everyone was just naturally interesting to him. And it wasn't because he was trying to look Christian or something like that. He was just that way. He had what the writer David Brooks called eulogy virtues. Like those virtues people talk about at a memorial service when someone dies and they're giving a eulogy. At the end of this man's life, although there was great pain, he was able to let go of his life with enormous gratitude. I mean, his body aged. He didn't have the same title or office anymore, but his spirit was filled with so much hope. And when he died, the circle of love and the stories that got told about him and the lives that were touched by him and the joy he produced just rippled and rippled and rippled and rippled. With the second person, in a lot of ways, it was almost the exact opposite. He had what David Brooks called resume virtues, qualities that make for a successful career, but the closer you got to this person's life and the inner circle, the more troubling the truth was, and the worse his house looked. He treated people badly, often using a combination of fear and intimidation along with flattery or manipulation. It was clear in 100 ways that his ego was running the show, even though he was doing it all in God's name. His life was full of secrets. No one really knew him. If you ask people who worked under him, was it life-giving or joy-producing to work with him? I mean, they would have literally laughed. People would be impressed from a distance, but up close, this was a life that was empty and lonely. And when his power and when his title were gone, there were no people who were bound to him by love. At the end of his life, you could feel him trying to desperately grasp onto a little kingdom that no longer belonged to him, because that little kingdom, that was his little kingdom, was all he ever really had. They were two lives that from a distance would look so familiar. But when you got up close and personal, it was gold, silver, and precious stones, and it was wood, hay, and straw. What am I building my life with? You know, sometimes it's the story of two families. From the outside, both sets of kids look really high achieving and everyone admires the family. But if you get close, one of them is filled with coldness and pressure to perform, and the other one is filled with just love and joy. Two different coaches. They both have the same record, but one coach operates on anger and fear and intimidation, and the other one builds his team with teaching and inspiration and courage and love. There's a psychologist named Erik Erikson. He wrote about the stages of life that adults pass through. And it's so interesting. He said that the final stage of life before you die was either integrity or despair. Integrity is when you've built a life, a character, or a soul that's made up of those qualities of the spirit that will stand up to the fire when it's revealed on the day. Despair is when you've built with wood, hay, and stubble. No matter how big and impressive your house looks, and no matter what your resume is, what are you building your life with? Is there a relationship where you just need to pour out some love? Is there someone you need to encourage or listen to or play with or serve or give a gift to? Is there any place where God is calling you to be grateful, to stop comparing your house to someone else's house? Maybe you're building the house of hurry and you're just rushing through it day after day after day. You don't think about God. You don't think about your relationship with him. You don't make time for prayer. You don't make space for your soul because you don't have time. You're just hurrying through life and missing what matters most. The main thing God gets out of your life is the person you become. He's not going to be terribly interested in your resume. You know, we're going to continue this topic next week. I'm going to teach from another passage in First Corinthians about the four selves that each of us have. There's a public you, there's a private you, and there's a real you. And then there's a fourth you that will just take your breath away. We're going to talk about that next week. All right, I want to talk in this last part about the second question that this passage poses. The first question is, what will I build my life with? The second question is, what foundation will I build my life on? And Paul has this very intriguing, mysterious statement. This is a real fascinating passage. He says, even someone who builds with the wrong material, even someone where there's a lot of wood and a lot of hay and a lot of stubble, and they're making a lot of mistakes and they're getting a lot of stuff wrong in their life, even if they do that, they'll lose some of their rewards. So in other words, like, I take that to mean some of the goodness that God has made for them to enjoy, that God has would have built into them, they're going to lose some of that, but they'll still be saved. Paul says they'll still be the kind of person who will be able to be with God throughout eternity if they have the right foundation. Your foundation is what you count on more than anything else. Your foundation
is what your heart depends on to make you secure when the world gets shaken up. My foundation is my ultimate commitment. It's not just what I say my ultimate commitment is, but it's really what my ultimate commitment is. It might be money. For a lot of people, it is. It might be health. For a lot of people, it is. It might be looks. For a fair amount of people, it is. And then aging is real painful. It might be intelligence. It might be having my kids turn out just right. Paul said, "For no one could lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ." He laid that foundation, of course, supremely on the cross through his whole life and his teaching and his acts of servanthood, but then in his self-giving death on the cross, which then ended in his resurrection, starting this new building that God is building, the church, and that's you and me. And we can make Jesus the foundation of our lives, not my circumstances, not my emotions. I can trust him. I can depend on him. I can hand over my dreams to him. I can take my direction from him. I can confess my sins to him. I'll tell you, when you make Jesus the foundation of your life, whatever storms come, and the storms will come, it might rock your world, but it will not end your world. When you make Jesus your foundation, sometimes God takes material that you thought you did not want, that you thought were so painful, and he makes them in a strange redemptive twist, the most beautiful part of your house, where love and joy and peace shine through brightest of all. I've seen God do this. And I want you to hear just one story of one such life. This is our kids' pastor, Ashley.
My husband and I had been married for about 4 years when we welcomed our second baby, Presley, into our lives. Presley, we named her Presley. Presley means priest, and her middle name is Reese, which means enthusiastic. So we knew when Presley was coming into our life that she would be called enthusiastic priest, one that would be full of joy and one that would minister to those around her. So Presley was a great baby. She was easygoing. We just loved having a second girl. And her big sister adored her. Bria at the time was 3 years old when she was born. Around 7 or 8 months, we started noticing some delays in Presley. At the time, we didn't know they were delays, but just really puzzling things. For instance, one of the things was she wasn't picking up food and feeding herself from her high chair. Like, I was so confused. I would go to my baby books and like, when should she be doing this? I feel like she should already be doing this. And this just continued. When she was 1 year old, we had a little smash cake for her at her birthday, and I could tell she wanted it, but she still wasn't using her hands to grab the food and feed herself. So, long story short, we ended up getting her evaluated at the suggestion of my mother-in-law. And the therapist determined, you know, she's 14 months old, but she's playing at a six-month-old level. And I'm like, okay, great. Well, what does that mean? And they were so careful at the time not to give her a diagnosis, not to label anything. But I'm like, confused, and this has just left me with tons of questions and fears and uncertainty. And they send us home, and they began to do early intervention therapy, where they had several therapists come to our house several times a week. I just felt like it was constant, and it didn't make me feel any better about maybe her future or where she was going or what she was going to be able to do, because it just put this big magnifying glass on her inability to talk, to connect with us, to show affection, to make eye contact. And so this began kind of a mental spiral of fear and anxiety about her. She was our second baby, and around this time I was pregnant with our third child. And was really battling with the Lord. My foundation was rocked, and I never ever imagined having to go through this with one of our children. Like, what will her future look like? Will she live with us forever? And I remember one night we had a friend in town. Her and her husband were in town, and I just was at such a low point and so scared that I said it out loud, what you don't say out loud. I said, well, what if she has autism? And every special needs parent feels that way when you're going through early diagnosis, but no one, you dare not say it out loud. But I just said, what if she has autism? Like, in my mind, that was the worst thing that a child could have, because there was so much lack of understanding back then at her age. And I remember our friends looked at us and they were like, so? And they have 10 kids, so they're like the best parents. And it just gave me, just hearing their like, so, just gave me the strength to kind of start working through this with the Lord. And so I prayed, I processed, and I just remember surrendering to God, like, okay, well, here we go. We're going to do this. And I remember taking Presley to bed one night, and this was the night that I had a big breakthrough with God, being like, well, whatever her future looks like, we're going to do this together, and we're going to support her, and we're just going to give her the best experiences of her life and love her and celebrate her. And the night I had this breakthrough, I'm walking up the stairs, and Presley, halfway up the stairs, she lays her head on my shoulder. And it was the first time that she had ever shown affection. And I just stopped on the stairs and I held her and I held this moment. And I was like, oh my gosh, her little spirit knows and she can feel that I've had breakthrough and love and connection, like being okay with the uncertainty of her future. And so fast forward through the years, Presley, every time she hits a milestone, it might take lots of years, it is such a celebration for our family. Presley brings so much joy and humor to our family. And around first grade, she was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and intellectual development delay. But she has blown us away at how she overcomes. She's a fighter. How she will learn a skill, and we go crazy and celebrate her. And it's really, she's the glue to our family. It has taught our kids empathy. It has taught us to make an experience out of everything, because the more experiences that Presley has, the more it unlocks her. And just 2 years ago, when she was 12 years old, she's 14 now, she started fully talking. And still to this day, to hear her say, mom, 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 I mean, it melts my heart. You know, those were scary years when I didn't know if she would ever talk or connect. And she's like the most affectionate child, and she brings joy to those around her. She loves a good dance party. And even at school, the teachers are like, she's such a leader. If we have a child who's like crying or having a hard time transition, they go get Presley to minister. I say minister, but to minister to them, to help them transition well. And the kids really respond to Presley. And we are just so grateful all that God's done, and trusting him with this life and the way that she brings joy and ministers to those around her.
You see, God is that way. Like, the birth that looked like it was a heartache can bring so much joy, joy like nothing else. And really what it all depends on is, what is the foundation of your life? Let me make it personal. For every one of us, what foundation are you building your life on? I grew up in the Midwest in Chicago, where tornadoes were quite common when I was a little kid, and so I didn't mind them very much. When I moved to California, do you want to guess what I was afraid of? Yeah, earthquakes. Like, my favorite structure in the Bay Area is by far the Golden Gate Bridge. It's quite bold because its Great South Pier rests directly on the fault zone of the San Andreas Fault. Why would any sane person ever go onto that bridge? Earl Palmer writes that by design, every part of the bridge, the roadway, its railings, its great crossbeams, is related to the vast cable system, to two great towers that are deeply embedded into the rock foundation underneath the sea. If an earthquake comes, it can sway 22 feet at the center of the roadway and not fall down. In other words, the bridge is totally preoccupied with its foundation. That's the secret strength. That's what makes it so strong and enduring when the world shakes. Last week, I was talking to someone about baptism. He's a basketball coach in Germany, but he wants to be baptized here at Blue Oaks while he's at home. And so I wanna know if there's anyone who wants to get baptized next Sunday. So if I just figured we could probably pull this off on such a short notice. I think we can. So if you're interested in getting baptized next Sunday, would you send me an email this week? And if you've made the decision to make Jesus Christ the foundation of your life, the very next step for you is to get baptized as a symbol of that commitment. And if you've not done that yet, you can actually make him the foundation of your life today. In light of the cross, you can confess your sin and die to the house of ego and envy and hurry and ask him to become the leader and the bedrock of your life. And then next week, you can get baptized. You can come here to this building and you can get baptized and you can have our whole church cheering you on. Because a long time ago, there was a carpenter, a master carpenter, and he went into the house building business, and he still is. And if you let him, he will build your house. All right, let me pray for you. God, we're all building our house, the life that you've given us. And we're so grateful, God. Thank you for this life that you've given us. We confess, God, though, that there are times when we build with wood and hay and straw, and it's meaningless. God, would you help us to focus on building our life on a solid foundation, on what we know in your word, the way that you want us to live our lives. Help us to live with these virtues that you've given us of love and joy and peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. These virtues help us to live according to these characteristics that are the gold, silver, and precious stones. And that will last beyond this life into eternal life with you. God, help us to live that kind of life that we will be proud of one day when we stand before you on that day of judgment, that day when you're gonna give us rewards. God, would you give us the guidance we need, give us the discernment we need? Thank you that your Holy Spirit is in us, our great counselor, to give us the direction we need in this life, to build on a solid foundation and to build with the right materials so that we're becoming the kind of people that you want us to be, that we will be proud to be one day when we're at the end. God, we ask for your help. We're gonna need it. And we ask it in Jesus' name, amen.
Hey, once again, thanks for listening. We hope you found something in this week's message to take away and apply to your life this week. If you live in the Bay Area, we would love to have you join us for one of our weekend services. For directions or information about what we have for you or your family, your students, you can go to blueoaks.church or download the app today. We hope to see you on Sunday soon.